is Radio Boston. I'm Adam Ragusea in for Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Imagine going to prison for almost 20 years for a crime you didn't commit. That's what happened to Dennis Mayer of Tewksbury, and we're going to hear from him in a moment. But first, the reason he's out now and able to tell us his story is because modern DNA testing finally proved he was innocent.
According to the Innocence Project, which advocates for the wrongfully convicted, post-conviction DNA testing has exonerated and freed 280 people in the United States. That includes 17 who had been sentenced to death for crimes they did not commit.
But here's the thing. While 48 states have laws that grant prisoners the right to post-conviction DNA testing, Massachusetts does not. It's one of just two states, along with Oklahoma, that does not have a DNA law on its books. We're going to talk about why that is and about pending legislation to change that.
But first, Dennis Mayer. In 1983, Mayer was a 23-year-old Army sergeant on leave in Lowell. Police stopped him and arrested him for marijuana possession. But as Mayer told us, they suspected him for something much more serious.
And they ran a background check and it came back negative. I didn't even have a speeding ticket. And I said, well, what are you questioning me about? And he says, well, we're questioning you about a rape and an attempted rape.
Eventually, prosecutors charged Mayer with three brutal sexual assaults in Lowell and Ayer. He denied the charges, but the victims picked him out of a police lineup. A jury found him guilty. As he was being sentenced, the judge asked the 23-year-old soldier if he had anything to say.
I said, Your Honor, if you call this justice, I think you and your whole judicial system are a crock of shit. So he doubled my sentence.
Mayer ended up with a life sentence for the three assaults. He continued to insist on his innocence, and after 9 years, he contacted lawyers at the Innocence Project, who'd begun using DNA evidence to free the wrongfully convicted. They spent the next decade working on his case.
So they started looking at the evidence, and they found the evidence, and then they came and got my blood. You know, on Christmas Eve 2002, I got the results that the DNA did not match. That cleared me in the Lowell case, so I still had the Ayer case. And they were still looking for evidence of that. Then all of a sudden, about 2 weeks later, a slide shows up on Martha Coakley's desk from my case. And that came back with two different DNAs, and neither one of those were mine. So that exonerated.
So after more than 19 years, on April 3rd, 2003, you walked out a free man.
Right.
So when you reflect on all that time you spent in prison, what do you feel, Dennis?
Well, I feel a sense of loss, but I can't dwell on it. If I let myself be angry, I could get angry really easy. But if I was to do that, then I wouldn't have what I have now. You know, I'm happily married. I got two children. I have a good job. You know, life is good now.
As you know, today we're talking about a proposed law in Massachusetts that would make it easier for people who might be wrongfully convicted to get DNA testing. I gather you think such a law would be a good idea.
I think it would be an awesome idea. I did an extra 6 years in prison because there are no DNA laws in Massachusetts. There's only two states that don't have DNA laws, Oklahoma and Massachusetts.
Well, I want to thank you very much for telling your story today, and I want to wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you.
Dennis Mayer now lives in Tewksbury with his wife and two children. He spoke to us from his job in Woburn. Listeners, we're talking now about post-conviction DNA testing. Did you know that Massachusetts is one of just two states that does not grant prisoners the right to DNA testing? Do you think that law should be changed? And do you know any stories of the wrongfully convicted that would be helped by such a change? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And joining us now is reporter Michael Blanding, who wrote about Dennis Mayer and efforts in Massachusetts to pass a DNA testing law in Sunday's Boston Globe magazine. Michael is a senior fellow at the Schuster Center for Investigative Journalism at Brandeis University. And Michael, great to have you on Radio Boston. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Gretchen Bennett. She's executive director of the New England Innocence Project. And Gretchen, great to have you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thanks for coming in. Gretchen, let me start with you. When you hear these stories, we just heard Michael Mayer's story of the wrongfully convicted. I'm always struck by what they have in common, the common threads that lead someone to being wrongfully convicted. What happened in Dennis Mayer's case? What did you hear?
Well, in Dennis's case, it was largely a case of mistaken identity. There were two separate cases, and so once he had been convicted in the first case, which really was just a series of tragic errors, it was much easier to convict him in the second case. And there's sort of an, I don't know if it's an irony, but the officer who was responsible for Dennis's case in Ayer was also involved in another one of our exonerations, the exoneration of Kenny Waters, which was the subject of the movie Conviction that came out last year with Hilary Swank. That was bad police work. But most of the time, these are honest mistakes.
And honest mistakes, in this case, I guess the honest mistake was victim identification, right? I mean, the victim misidentifying.
And that was actually not an initial identification. That identification didn't take place immediately. And eyewitness identification is plays a role in around 75 to 79% of the wrongful convictions that we find. So we know that it's a problem.
Mm. Michael, I want to talk to you a little bit about the excellent piece you did on Sunday. You wrote that in 1994, New York becomes the first state to grant prisoners the right for post-conviction DNA testing. Now, 48 states have such laws. Why doesn't Massachusetts?
That was a question that we had ourselves. That was our reason for doing the story in the first place. It just seems like such a contradiction that Massachusetts has this liberal reputation, and yet it's such an outlier on this issue. And while we didn't really find one thing that you could point to, I think there's three things that really contribute to this. One is that Massachusetts does have a fairly liberal law for people to get new trials when they're incarcerated. There's some problems with using that law to access DNA evidence, which we can talk about, but there's a perception that there is a process already in place. And
this is the so-called Rule 30 law, right?
Exactly.
And basically that allows inmates to receive a new trial if they can show there's new evidence. Right,
right, exactly. And the problem that happens is that you need to have that new evidence in order to get a new trial, but you need to, in many cases, have a new trial in order to get discovery that will get you that DNA evidence tested. And so it's this real catch-22 where you can't get the trial without the evidence and you can't get access to the evidence without the trial.
Yeah. And Gretchen, I gather that one of the other things that you're up against when you're trying to get someone DNA testing is that prosecutors, even victims' families, are unwilling to accept the idea that a mistake has been made. So much was invested in the conviction, a sense of closure and resolution was reached. Is that a play here as well?
Of course it is. And it's understandable.
Sure.
I think that, you know, there are obviously ways around this. This bill doesn't provide any kind of get out of jail free card. This is really just providing guidelines so that we are all on an even playing field and know what the rules are when we're trying to get access to the evidence. I think that there are things that could be put in place to protect victims. I know that one of the concerns is that it's upsetting to people to have these things looked at again. But so much would have to be done before a case would be reopened that I think that that could be handled. There's federal money specifically to put victim programs in place in cases like this. Massachusetts would be eligible for that money if we passed the statute, and I would work to see that done.
And let's talk about this statute. I understand it passed unanimously in the Senate, Michael. What would the statute actually do? How would it work?
Well, I think this statute is one that has been proposed since 2003, and I think one of the initial problems with this statute was that it was really pushed by defense attorneys, the ACLU, and there were provisions in the statute that allowed judges to actually overturn a conviction depending on the way the DNA testing came out. And the current version of the statute, which was really crafted by a broad-based team of former prosecutors, current prosecutors, defense attorneys, really kind of ran the gamut of the criminal justice system. And it would really just allow for prisoners who claimed actual innocence and had evidence that hadn't been previously tested to test the evidence, and then from there they could make a motion to determine whether they could actually use that evidence to prove their innocence in a new trial. So it makes it more of a two-step process.
I see. So it's been passed unanimously by the Senate. What are its prospects in the House?
It seems like it has a good chance of passing. There's no real opposition that we found. We couldn't find any legislators who were against it. but it passed in the Senate in July, and currently it's in the Ways and Means Committee in the House. It hasn't moved much in the past few months, and they've got until next year to pass it.
Well, let me introduce Michael O'Keefe. He's the district attorney for the Cape and Islands, as well as the vice president of the Massachusetts District Attorneys Association, and he's with us on the phone right now. And Michael O'Keefe, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate you taking the time out of your day.
You're welcome.
So give us a sense of your take. We know that some of the district attorneys have had a problem with the idea of post-conviction DNA testing. Are you okay with this general idea that's being proposed in this bill now pending in the legislature?
Well, first of all, I think everyone is unanimous among the elected district attorneys with respect to the concept behind this bill. As so often happens, the particular language is very important as to whether or not there are sufficient gatekeeper provisions and safeguards that would not, adversely impact families of either the deceased or families who have been the victims of rape or some other crime.
And can you be specific, Mr. O'Keefe, about that? What does that mean, sufficient gatekeeper provisions? I mean, what are you concerned about?
Well, one wouldn't want to. I'll give you just one quick example. There was a conviction in 1997 of a man for the rape and murder of an 82-year-old woman who had dementia and lived in a remote area with her son, and there was a barn on the property, and in the barn there was a place for a renter to live, and the son was looking for his missing mother, went out to the barn and encountered the person who turned out to be the defendant in the case emerging from the bedroom naked with blood on him, and as he looked into the room and saw his 82-year-old mother beaten, naked, bloodied, the defendant said to him, "She came on to me." He was ultimately convicted and was serving life without parole. He availed himself of Rule 30, and under two different motions, a judge denied further DNA testing in that case.
So you would want to make sure that if there was any law that gave prisoners the right to post-conviction DNA testing, that they wouldn't use it in the way that you just described, in a sort of frivolous way that obviously...
Correct. Right. You would want to be have some assurance that we were looking at a piece of evidence that was probative and would be relevant on the question of actual innocence. Hmm. And I can't imagine any circumstance in which a district attorney would not, jump at the chance to have that kind of testing done.
All right.
And I think we're unanimous in our view of that. And I would go back and urge people who are interested in this issue to look at several reports generated by the Massachusetts District Attorneys, one that goes as far back as July of 2001.
And we'll do that, Mr. O'Keefe. I just want to get Gretchen Bennett with the Innocence Project to just respond to a couple of things you said. It seems like District Attorney O'Keefe was talking about some reasonable restraints on any legislation. Does it sound reasonable to you?
Yes, I agree with that. I think that the evidence would have to be probative. We're very, very careful about the cases that we screen, and we leave cases if we find evidence that doesn't point to innocence during our investigation. And so I agree that only probative evidence that actually would tend to exonerate should be tested. This is just provides a way to go about requesting that testing, essentially.
I guess, you know, Mr. O'Keefe, I understand that you've got to go and we're grateful for your time. I just want to ask one more question. You know, what's your best answer about 48 other states have these laws on the books? Massachusetts, as Michael Blanding noted, progressive, known as a progressive state in all kinds of other areas. How come we've been so slow to get here?
Well, you know, that's an interesting way to phrase and frame the issue, because Massachusetts, as I think we all agree, has a tremendous tradition of protecting civil liberties and civil rights of individuals. And I think that's why we have a Rule 30, which is probably more expansive than any other version of that in any other jurisdiction in the United States.
Hmm.
And it's a little bit, I don't want to be disagreeing with Michael, but it's a neat phrase to say that you have to have the evidence first before you can have the testing. I don't think that's quite accurate, because I think the law under Rule 30 is that if you can bring to the court a likelihood that what you're seeking is going to lead to evidence that would tend to show actual innocence, you're going to be entitled to it. And if some district attorney is recalcitrant about that, a judge can order the discovery of it and order the testing of it. So, you know, I think that there is a substantial protection there that's already in place via Rule 30. But listen, having said all of that, I am very, very concerned, as my colleagues are, with respect to the idea of an innocent person spending an hour in jail, let alone 12 or 19 years or whatever the case might be. Hmm. So we will look carefully at this legislation. We have all endorsed in concept the notions behind this legislation, but the devil's in the details, and, you know, as it winds its way through the House, we'll certainly look at it.
All right, we'll all be paying attention to it. Michael O'Keefe, District Attorney for the Cape and Islands, thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Yeah. If I could just add one thing.
Very quickly, you know, please.
I want to commend the Innocence Project, both nationally and here in this state, for the work that they have done. And I hope that we can work together to expand the availability of DNA, because the more that DNA is available, the more the resources are in place to have that utilized, we will see this problem recede.
Hmm. Michael O'Keefe, thanks again. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Listeners, we're talking about post-conviction DNA testing and about this peculiar fact that Massachusetts is one of just two states that does not grant prisoners the right to DNA testing right now. Give us a call if you have any questions about this. Do you think this law should be changed? There is legislation pending now on Beacon Hill. Give us a call if you know any stories of the wrongfully convicted that would be helped by such a change. Gretchen, let me come to you and sort of back up and ask a really basic question. The best argument in favor of these laws that give prisoners the right to post-conviction DNA testing.
Well, I think the best argument, candidly, is that this is a public safety issue, that when we incarcerate the wrong person, the actual perpetrator is still out on the street committing more violent crimes. And nationally, these DNA tests, in the cases where there have been exonerations, these DNA tests have led to the capture and conviction of over 40% of the cases. They've led to the real perpetrator. And in Massachusetts, just sort of ironically, the day that the hearing was held on this bill in the Senate and House Judiciary Committee, in a courthouse down the street, a real perpetrator was pleading guilty to three rapes for which one of our exonerees served 12 years before DNA cleared him.
So DNA cleared him, but in the process, it actually pointed to the real person who was guilty.
That's right. And also solved two other previously unsolved rapes that had all been committed by this same man.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, to join this conversation about post-conviction DNA. And Michael Blanding, from your piece, I want to talk about what DNA, well, a couple of things. I want to make the point here that when we talk about DNA testing, it's only available in a relatively small percentage of cases, right? But what does it tell us about the overall state of the criminal justice system if we're just talking about a small fraction of cases in which it's actually available?
Yeah, that's one of the issues that we discovered. It's sort of a secondary issue to the issue of access to testing, is that in many cases, the DNA evidence has been lost or it's been mishandled or misfiled. And so inmates who actually claim actual innocence can't get the access to the material to test in the first place. And that's another thing that this law would do. It would actually preserve, there would be a mandate to preserve the evidence from here on going forward, or to more accurately catalog the evidence so that that those cases could be made.
Mm-hmm. Gretchen, you're nodding your head. So this is a big challenge, isn't it? Especially for the Innocence Project, just getting hold of where this evidence is,
for
example.
That's right. It's actually the biggest challenge. Yeah. Because the truth is, although it takes years and years for us to negotiate it, we do, if we can find the evidence, usually find a way to get access to it. It's true that usually DAs will agree, once we've figured out all the details, to testing, but locating the evidence is a much bigger problem. Because there's no statute that requires that the evidence be preserved, people don't actually even have to look for it. Mm. If it's old, they just assume that it's gone. Mm. In Dennis's case, you know, people searched for that evidence for over 6 years before it turned up. The same thing happened in Kenny Waters' case. We're frequently told that evidence has been destroyed, and then years later it turns up on a shelf somewhere, and there's just no way to deal with that.
And typically what we're talking about, or in many cases what we're talking about by evidence, is a rape kit, for example, right, that would provide DNA evidence from the examination after a rape, right? That's, and that can be preserved for years and years and years and then tested.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Here's what I'm curious about. When DNA testing began to be used widely, we saw the graph of the number of folks that were being exonerated sort of goes up, and now it's kind of tapering off. And is that because now DNA testing is available during the initial investigation? So I guess we could tend to see fewer and fewer exonerations through DNA as we go forward. Would that be right, Michael?
Yeah, it's pretty routine now that the DNA evidence is, or the evidence is tested for DNA during the actual investigation, actual court case now. So really the cases that we're talking about are ones from the late 80s, early 90s, before this kind of testing was widespread. And that was actually a point that I interviewed Martha Coakley for the story, the attorney general who's actually in favor of this bill. And that was one point that she made in the interview, that she anticipated that it would be actually a very small number of cases that would have to be tested and paid for under this bill.
Well, we've got a few listeners that would like to get into this conversation. Let's go to Chuck, who's calling from Waltham. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. I'm a little wary of district attorneys and prosecutors who say the last thing we want to do is keep someone in jail who's innocent. And the reason is that I see time after time all across the country, I'm not sure about Massachusetts, frankly, but I wouldn't be surprised, where after the DNA evidence is in and exonerates the prisoner or the accused, the prosecutor and or the district attorney involved says, I don't care. I know he's guilty, and I will continue my efforts.
Well, Chuck, it's a good point, and I'm glad you brought that up. I think we have to take District Attorney O'Keefe at his word. He's not on the line with us now, but Gretchen, Chuck does bring up a good point, and I've done some of these interviews in other states, and I've actually talked to prosecutors who had exactly that point of view. You know, the DNA showed that the case should have gone another direction, and they said, hey, the justice system has spoken, case closed.
Well, I hope we don't have any such DAs in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Jay Carney, who was the prosecutor in Dennis's case, actually apologized to him. I think that a lot of DAs, I mean, at the end of the day, I think we all want the system to work, and we want it to work properly. It can be hard to admit that you've made a mistake when you've invested so much in it, and I think that that's sort of human. But I don't actually understand the argument that despite the conclusive evidence, you know, I'm going to continue to insist that this person is guilty. It happens, but it's not really comprehensible to me.
Hmm. This is the final question. One of the things we've learned from DNA exonerations are all the reasons that these kind of convictions go wrong: coerced confessions, mistaken witness ID, junk science. I'm wondering if now that we've been, if we've been able to benefit from DNA exonerations and what they've taught us, if we're seeing fewer of these kinds of abuses. What do you think, Gretchen?
Well, there are other safeguards. Massachusetts is actually great in a number of other ways. Law enforcement in Massachusetts is particularly enlightened when it comes to things like eyewitness identification and sort of interrogation techniques and the importance of taping interrogations. The Boston Police Department, the Wellesley Police Department, the Northampton Police Department have all been leaders in this field. And so I'm hoping, as we continue to move to get access to the DNA, that we're also moving in a direction where we're preventing a lot of these from happening in the first place.
Gretchen Bennett, Executive Director of the New England Innocence Project, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Michael Blanding, reporter. He's a senior fellow at the Schuster Center for Investigative Journalism at Brandeis University, and he wrote about this subject in last Sunday's Boston Globe magazine. Michael, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And earlier, my thanks to Michael O'Keefe, District Attorney for the Cape and the Island. Stay with us up next. There'll be a lot of pie eaten tomorrow. Some of it will have been purchased through a Boston program that serves sick, homebound people meals all year round. I'm Anthony Brooks with Adam Ragusea. This is Radio Boston.